The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to another week of sports conversation about the Cats here on the Leach Report. Happy to have you on board with us today. Get prepared for more rain. It's been that kind of year. So tomorrow, I think, is supposed to be the worst of it. Going to be a big week for both Kentucky football and Kentucky basketball. And we'll get into some of that as we go through the week. Football practices start later this week. Basketball team leaves for the Bahamas a week from today, so they'll be able to step up their practices. They get 10 practices before they go to the Bahamas. I was thinking that the couple of the 10 might count toward the what they do in the Bahamas, but it's you get 10 practices before you leave. So they will get to go through those this week, finish those up, then leave on Monday. And then once you get down there, you can practice as much as you want. So they'll have shoot-arounds on the days of the games, and then a little practice time otherwise. They always give them some free time, too. A lot of it is just the bonding experience that happens. It's one of the big benefits of trips like this that you get to take every 4 years. Coming up on the show today, Mark Story is going to join us from the Herald Leader to talk mainly about his countdown of the top 50 greatest UK basketball victories that he concluded in yesterday's paper. And it was the number one was the Kentucky win over Indiana in 75. As DeGabriel and I were speculating that would be very high on the list when he joined me last week. So we'll talk with Mark about his list, feedback he's gotten, et cetera. Rex Chapman will join us. He's been able to see some practices, so we'll get some of the observations of Rex. And Lindsay Goff's going to finish us up today. She covered the UK Women's Clinic for Cats Illustrated on Saturday. So we'll hear what some of the coaches had to say to the ladies who attended that clinic on Saturday. Another big crowd that they had for that event. That's our guest lineup, and it's always presented by Sleep Outfitters. Going to get right to the Wildcat News of the day, and that's a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Practices start on Friday for Kentucky football. Media day is Friday morning. Fan day is on Saturday, so make sure you have that on your calendar. I believe they are having an open practice on Saturday as part of the fan day. Big week for basketball recruiting visits. Dante Allen from Pendleton County is going to visit on Wednesday. We would expect he'll be meeting with Cal during that visit. There was a nice story that Ben Roberts did at the Herald Leader site, KentuckySports.com, about Dante, talking with him and his dad. Dante said, quote, "I've been a fan my whole life of Kentucky." His dad said, "We're not giving Cal any ultimatums. He's a genius for what he does in the recruiting process." So they seem to be handling things very well, saying all the right things, and I think the expectation is that he'll get a scholarship offer while he's on this visit. And once that offer comes, one would think he won't wait too long to accept. So we'll see if it indeed plays out that way, but I think that's the expectation that a lot of people have. Khalil Whitney visits for the weekend, and I don't think it's a situation where it's an either-or. They would gladly take both of them because of this era where it was Cal was kind of one of the first guys to use the phrase positionless basketball, but you see it talked about a lot more where guys can swing from guard to forward to even center in some cases. So I think they wouldn't be surprised if they landed both of these guys. Wenyen Gabriel signs a two-way deal with the Kings. Happy for Wenyen. Now, Mike Pratt was explaining what the two-way deal means last week because I think that was what Alex Porter signed with the Hawks. But it guarantees him NBA money when he's up playing for the Kings, and so he's, I think, he'll play up to 45 games with the big club. So great for Wenyen. He obviously impressed them in his work in the Summer League, and I think the expectation for everybody was that Wenyan would be playing overseas, and instead he's going to be spending his time, splitting his time between the G League and the NBA. So really, just goes to show you what you don't know on for all of us on in terms of these NBA evaluations. Guys like Mike Pratt are the ones you should be listening to and what they're hearing and what they know, because there were a lot of experts that were telling us Wenyan was going to only be overseas, et cetera. No way Diallo would get much of a deal. He'd be just in the G League. And he may well spend a good chunk of his time there, but he's got a multi-year deal. Jared Vanderbilt gets a multi-year deal. Isaiah Briscoe comes back from Estonia with a multi-year deal. Doesn't mean all these guys are going to be 82 games in the NBA, but they have teams that are making a commitment to them. So there's more than just getting a cup of coffee here or getting a shot. Same for Wenyan Gabriel. So happy for all of those guys. Links to the stories that we talk about can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. We will take a break and come back with Mark Story from the Herald Leader on the Leach Report Radio Network.
Can't get to a radio? You can listen to us live on the web at TalkRadio1080.com. Now, back to the show.
Before we get to Mark's story, I have a caller on the line. Cody, what's up? Cody, go ahead.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
It's Tom, but go ahead.
Oh, hey, I'm sorry. I had to get off my voice, too. I know you, is Mike Pratt going down to the Bahamas with you?
Yes.
Okay, and have you seen any of the UK practices, the basketball?
Yes.
Okay, sorry, I haven't listened to your show in a couple of months. My questions were, who have you been most impressed with in the freshmen? And if, out of the shooters, is Harrell as good of a shooter as everybody's saying? Or do you think, like, Quade or Quickly, like, who do you think our best three-point shooter will be? And who do you think, besides the freshmen, out of, like, P.J. Washington and Reed Travis and them, who do you think would be our best big man? I'll hang up and listen.
As far as the player that's impressed me most, it's same as everybody else, Keldon Johnson, I think. And I have not seen as much as Mike has or Rex Chapman, who will be with us to lead off the second half of the show. As far as shooting, I haven't seen enough to have a strong opinion. I would think the best shooter would likely be Jamal Baker or Tyler Hero. And best big man, my guess is going to be PJ, but it's going to be quite a battle there with him, Reed Travis, and E.J. Montgomery, because you figure they're probably not going to be all three of them together on the court much, if at all. But I would probably give the vote to PJ at this time. Coming up next, Mark Story from the Lexington Herald Leader, KentuckySports.com, where you've been tracking his countdown of the top 50 greatest Kentucky wins of all time on the basketball court. And Mark, I'll let you, for folks that didn't pay enough attention, didn't catch it, whatever, as far as the frame-up of how you went about ranking these games, what your criteria was, tell us just in summary what that looked like.
Well, it was really hard, for one thing.
Yeah, I bet.
When we decided we were going to try to do it, I'm like, yeah, this will be really fun. So then I sat down and just I just list the games that immediately came to my mind. And, in 30 minutes, I had a list of 78 games. And I'm like, oh, boy. And then, by the time I researched and I showed the list to a couple of people whose, UK basketball knowledge I respect, and then we were over 200 games. And it took me a long time. I was having a hard time. I wanted some just magically objective format for ranking games, and that really didn't exist. So I eventually just had to accept it. It was going to be my list, and it would be subjective, but hopefully it would be informed subjectivity. And essentially, it made me think a lot about, what makes a great basketball game or what makes a great win. And ultimately, I came up with seven criteria, both teams, playing really, really well, high scoring, up tempo games, which are just the games I think are the most fun. know, dramatic comebacks. I mean, you know, I like those. You know, unexpected victories, you know, games that, you know, made history in some way, you know, big wins over rivals, and then victories against, you know, great players, teams with iconic players. You know, Kentucky's beaten, you know, some of the legends in basketball, Elgin Baylor and Jerry West and, you know, Hakeem Olajuwon, you know, Shaquille O'Neal and Pete Maravich, guys like that. So that ultimately was what I tried to rank games on.
A couple of things that were interesting of games that finished in the top five, and these were two that Gabriel and I touched on when he joined me last week and speculating what the top ten might look like at that point. And the number one game was not even a game that was in a Final Four, so I would think the unexpected nature of the upset of the 75 Indiana team probably carried a lot of the weight there. And then the other thing that was interesting is you had a win from a 14-14 season that was in your top five when Kentucky beat Shaq and the guys from LSU. Let's talk about that one first. And were you surprised that that ended up as high as it did on your list or not?
No, I wasn't. And if we were just ranking my favorite Kentucky games, that would be number one. You know, that to me is the most inexplicable outcome in the history of Kentucky basketball. That was in the 1989-90 season. You know, Kentucky only had 8 scholarship players because of the impact of NCAA probation. It was Rick Pitino's first year. Kentucky had no player taller than 6'7". You know, LSU came into Rupp Arena. They had Shaquille O'Neal. You know, they had the artist formerly known as Chris Jackson. And I think sometimes people forget how great a college player he was. They had Stanley Roberts, another NBA player who would go on to be an NBA center. And, you know, somehow Kentucky won that game. I used to have that game on tape, and I'm mad at myself. I didn't transfer it over when I switched to DVDs. But I used to watch it, and I still don't know how Kentucky won that game. And you think, well, you know, they must have hit a bunch of threes, but they really didn't. They were like 9 of 33 off the top of my head. It's just, you know, how did that happen? I mean, that to me, that's the most unlikely, you know, just inexplicable outcome in the history of Kentucky basketball. And I just think it was almost a case of kind of pure sports magic, and that's why I rank it so high.
I think there are a lot of people that, especially older fans, that have that 75 win over Indiana, that it's going to be hard to ever top that because it was Bobby Knight, it was the drama from the two coaches from earlier that season, and everything that went into that and how good that Indiana team was.
Right. I mean, there was just so much in that game. You know, Kentucky and Indiana had played earlier in the season. This was the 74-75 season. Indiana had just humiliated Kentucky, basically run them out of Bloomington. I think it was 98-74, and it wasn't that close. And, you know, the game also had the incident where there was some kind of discussion among the coaches and the referees at midcourt, and Joe Hall turned to walk back to the bench, and Bob Knight cuffed him upside the back of the head. Now, you know, Coach Knight would subsequently say, you know, that was just a playful gesture between friends. I don't think, well, I know because I've talked to him about it. That was not how Coach Hall interpreted it. He thought it was, you know, a sign of disrespect and kind of, you know, they were embarrassing Kentucky on the court and now they'd embarrass Kentucky, you know, sort of on the sidelines. So you had all that as a buildup, and then this game is in the Elite Eight. You know, Indiana is undefeated. They're going for an undefeated national championship. You know, you had just all that as a buildup, and then it was just a tremendous game. You know, it was a game Kentucky sort of had control of. I remember listening to it. I was a 10-year-old, and I was with my grandparents, and we'd been to the Sweet 16 in Louisville, the high school tournament, and we were coming home to Hardin County listening to the game on the radio, and it was a game Kentucky was ahead, and it just seemed like the clock wasn't running. It's like, you know, is the game ever going to end because, you know, Kentucky was ahead and Indiana was coming back. And, you know, I think for people old enough to remember that game that, yeah, I think it'll be hard to ever top that.
The game that was third on your list was the upset of the undefeated Wichita State team out in St. Louis in the round of 32 in 2014. And to me, that game was much like the legendary Kentucky-Duke game in 92. Unfortunately, Kentucky didn't win that one, obviously. But it was in that you had Kentucky – given very little chance to win, and the opponent played, it wasn't that the opponent played played down to a lower level. The opponent played very well, and it was, you know, two teams. It was like two heavyweight boxers just trading their best shots, and Kentucky prevailed. And it was amazing, really. You had, in that 2014 run, several of those games ended up on your list.
Yeah, you know, I had four of the 2014, you know, tournament games in the top 50. I think I had four of the 78 tournament games in the top 50. I had three of the 98. It was funny how certain teams just seemed like, you know, just seemed like they were on kind of magical runs, and they produced, you know, a lot of memorable games. I felt guilty. The 96 team, which in my opinion is the best Kentucky team of my lifetime, and I don't think it's that close. I think I had one game, but they were just whacking everybody.
Yeah.
So, you know, but yeah, that Wichita State game, I didn't cover the Leitner game, so that's the best NCAA tournament game I've ever seen in person. And the big reason is the one you alluded to. Wichita State played great.
Yeah.
And they shot almost 60%. You know, Klee Anthony Early and Ron Baker had huge games. And Kentucky, you know, absorbed all that and found a way to win. And the game was played at such a high level. And I think sometimes people forget how good Wichita State was. They'd been to the Final Four the year before, and that was a team that had every chance to win the national championship. And for Kentucky to go in and play that well, and Wichita to play that well, it was just a classic game.
Talking with Mark Story from the Herald Leader. We'll take a quick break. Come back with one more segment after this timeout. It's the Leach Report Radio Network.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
We're talking with Mark Story about his list of the top 50 greatest Kentucky basketball wins. You could see it at KentuckySports.com, the recap. What's the game you had the hardest time leaving out of the top 50? What was 51 for you?
Well, there were a couple that I really struggled with. First one will sound kind of funny, but I really wanted to have the 1921 Kentucky win over Georgia in the Southern, what was it, the Southern Intercollegiate Athletic Conference tournament, because I think it was the first tournament Kentucky ever won. I think if you go back and read about, you know, kind of the reaction back in Lexington and the way the team was received when they got back on the train from the game, that to me that was sort of the starting point of kind of the Kentucky basketball phenomenon. And I really wanted to include that. But when I got right down to it, and there were just so many great games, I kept kind of had a voice in my head, you know, if we could really go back and watch that game, you know, would we really regard it as, you know, one of the greatest games? So reluctantly, I took that out. The two games, there was a game against Kansas in the round of 32 in the 1999 NCAA tournament.
Oh, yeah. In New Orleans.
Kind of a small classic. You know, Scott Padgett and Wayne Turner sort of bailed Kentucky out in a game that looked like they were going to lose. I thought that was a really good game that I hated to leave out. And then the game I actually was thinking about the whole time as I was, you know, formatting these stories that I didn't have in there, and I mentioned the 96 team, was their Elite Eight game against Wake Forest, and they just clocked Wake Forest. But
oh, yeah,
the defense
Tim Duncan.
On Tim Duncan was just incredible.
It's Mark, got to run. Thank you so much. It was a great list. Appreciate the time.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at Tom Leach KY.
Welcome back into the show for this Monday as we welcome in Rex Chapman. Works with us on the UK Sports Network during basketball season this time of year. Among the things he gets to do is go check out some practices and see the new cats and the returning cats for John Calipari. And Rex, I can tell from Twitter you like what you see.
Yeah, Tom, man, it's good to be here talking with you. I can't wait for football season, but basketball will be right around the corner. Yeah, I'm fortunate to be able to go over and watch these guys play as they're preparing to leave for the Bahamas here in a week or so. So it's been a lot of fun. I really couldn't be more excited. I think if healthy, you know, come tournament time, we'll have a legitimate shot of playing in the Final Four and should have a chance to win it, health permitting.
I am really looking forward to this Bahamas trip to see the different combinations Cal puts out there, who plays well together, plays well off each other, that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, I am too. You know, we have options. What I really like about this team is we have you know, last year was a bit of a roller coaster in that Shea, really, for the most part, was kind of our only sort of steady hand all throughout the season. Kevin, there were had times that, you know, and then Quade at times, PJ at times, but we only had really one guy that we knew really what he was going to do all night. And I think we have six or seven guys like that this year. You know, obviously PJ and Quade coming back, but the addition of Reed Travis, I'm Stanford kid, he's a grown man for our locker room, looks you in the eye, he'll represent us well on and off the floor in interviews, but especially in the locker room. He's going to be he'll be such a good influence on our young players. And then, gosh, our freshmen are, you know, Nick's getting better, but our freshmen with Tyler and Keldon, Emmanuel, Ashton, EJ, this is a really, really talented group of freshmen.
Let's talk about a couple of the returning guys to get your thoughts on what you're seeing. Start with PJ. I watched a practice last week, so I'm just stepping out and shooting and hitting some 15 and 18 footers as I would have expected. What are you seeing in his game?
Same. The one thing that I'm seeing from PJ is just a level of comfort and confidence that he never had last year. I think going and, you know, putting his name in the draft, going through that process, because it's a grueling process if you're a guy who might be ready or might be not, because you're playing against guys who are ready every day. They can do all the things that you might not be able to, that you might be able to do in a year. I just think it was a really mature and grown-up decision on he and his family's part for him to come back here for a second season, because he's just, he's stronger. He knows what to expect. I think it was a really a very mature decision by PJ and a good basketball decision for him to return to school.
What about Quade?
And he is shooting the ball better. Yeah. Quade, same. Very much the same. And I'll throw Nick in there. You know, I saw Nick the other day for the first time since, you know, the spring. And the first time I saw him, he had a big smile on his face, and I said, man, that's the first time since I've seen you smile since this time last year.
Good point.
And he's happy to be in the gym. He is getting better every day. Quade, again, he's leaned up. He's gotten quicker, which is going to help him, especially on the defensive end, but it'll help him on the offense. He's such a good offensive player anyway, Tom. I mean, last year he'd get by a guy, and by the time he got to the rim to finish, the length and athleticism of these type players, you know, they might be able to recover. He's getting the ball up on the rim quicker. I'm expecting a big year from Quade.
Let's move to some of the new guys. What do you like about the games of the guards, Hagans and Quickly?
They're both really different, and I really like both. Ashton potentially can be the best on-ball defender, you know, or one of them, you know, in the mold of Cliff Hawkins and Dominique Hawkins, Dickie Beal. These guys, he's really special athletically. He's very long-limbed. Offense, he's still working on that. Shot's not bad. He just, when you hear the term bat out of hell, that's what Ashton is right now offensively. So they're trying to get him to play with greater pace, you know, a little bit more pace in his game. Emmanuel, he's been hurt a little bit. He had he fell on his face and knocked out a couple teeth one day. And then he pulled a groin a little bit, but he's back now and just a different player. He gets to his spot, very nice player. He shoots the ball well. But then, you know, you start talking about Tyler Hero, and is it Hero or Hero? What are we going with, Tom?
I have not gotten a consensus yet. Hero is the one I've heard most often.
I'll ask him tomorrow. We've exchanged numbers. I've exchanged numbers with some of these guys and told him to call whenever. But I'm going to ask him the next time because I don't know. Anyway, I think he has a chance to be a really, really good player. A little bit taller than I am. Maybe, I don't know lengthwise, but plenty long, plenty athletic, very quick. And knows how to play. I mean, I think he can play for us this season. He can play the wings easily, but I think he could give you spot minutes at the one. So he's a really good player, shoots it really well. And then Keldon Johnson, who I'm not sure I could be more excited about from his mind. He plays, he's a conscientious player, plays the game with integrity and character on both ends of the floor. He is unbelievably fast. He can score the basketball like nobody's business. And if he's double teamed, he gets rid of it. He's a terrific passer with great feel. He's trying to dunk everything in the paint. He can shoot it. People are going to have a problem with Keldon Johnson if he's as good as I think he can be.
I was trying to figure out when watching him, I heard people compare him to MKG as far as guys here and just, you know, his intensity. Just looking at body type, the name that popped in my mind, and I don't know about who jumps to yours, Bradley Beal, just kind of broad shoulders. I don't know if he shoots it that way.
Not bad. Yeah, built that way, but bigger. He is a bit bigger and he's longer. They have a different game, but if you remember a guy, now we're getting old, Tom. Remember Nick Anderson from Illinois?
Illinois.
Yeah,
played
with the Magic. But Nick was a two in our day. Keldon can play in today's game, he would be able to play some one through four at the next level. He's going to play, he'll play every position for us, I think, but he has a chance to be really good. His attitude is great. He's a leader without trying to be a leader. I think we can have a really good team. And then I don't want to forget EJ. EJ Montgomery
has been
sort of the pleasant surprise for me. They all have been. But, I didn't know very much about EJ. EJ can shoot the basketball. He's 6'11". Shoots it from the perimeter. He's better passing and making basketball plays than I thought. If EJ, and I think he will, if EJ blocks shots, that makes us kind of different. And I think he will.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, Travis and PJ are not big shot-blocking guys, so that's a way Montgomery could separate himself a little bit.
That and Nick. Nick's mm-hmm. going to have to come in and give us some shot-blocking. But if those two guys can hold things down, and PJ's going to block them off the ball shot, as is Reed. But, on the ball and being long on the basketball and playing up where teams can't play over the top of you, as you know, is a big deal. So we're going to have plenty of athletes that can jump up there to 11 feet. So I'm not worried about that.
Yeah, in watching Hero a little bit, everybody thinks just, shooter, but I saw him mixing it up for rebounds and put his nose in there defensively.
I would say he is a terrific shooter, but that's the least impressive part I've seen
Ooh.
From him. Yeah. Potential-wise.
Travis, give me a quick thought on what you see, what you like in his game.
I love that he wanted to come here. I mean, he could have gone to, I think he could have gone to Villanova. He could have gone to a few other places, but I'm just thrilled that he, a Stanford kid, a Pac-12 kid who's played in a terrific conference, has decided to come here and try to win a national championship. It's a huge move for him. It's a huge move that Cal and Kenny and Joel and Tony and those guys were able to recruit him and get him here. And I think he excites them as well. He's having to learn, though, right now. He played in the Pac-12 for 3 or 4 years, and I don't know that Nick was ever, or that Reed was ever thrown a lob. So he's having to learn now, instead of picking and rolling, to roll and catch lobs at the rim, which he's absolutely capable of doing. But it's just a different game. So I'm excited. I'm also excited because with the bodies that and the toughness and the physical play that they relished in Reed and PJ Nick this year, we should have the front court battle won most every night right at the jump ball, because SEC players and most college players are not going to want to play against two guys that physical. They sort of remind me of when I was in Denver a few years ago. We had Kenyon Martin and Nene on the front line, and nobody ever wanted to play that physical basketball in this day and age anymore. So I'm excited from that standpoint.
Rex, great stuff. Appreciate it. And we'll catch up to you after the Bahamas for a little review.
Sounds good, Tom. Enjoy.
That is Rex Chapman. Some great insight on the Cats. And I know all of you are eagerly awaiting those games next week. Football practice starts this week for the Wildcats. Saturday, they had their annual women's clinic. We're going to hear a little bit about that and more when we come right back. It's the Leach Report Radio Network. When you lose power, you lose business. Why not?
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Coming up next, it's Kentucky Sports Radio with Matt Jones.
12 away from the top of the hour, it is our Monday edition of the Leach Report. Lindsay Goff joins us. She covered UK's women's clinic for the football team on Saturday for Cats Illustrated, and the story is up there on the site that you can read the recap of, but we thought we'd get her on to talk a little bit about Lindsay, first things that anything you heard or saw that was unexpected or surprising at all as you look toward the upcoming season?
I don't think there was anything unexpected per se. The women were quieter than usual. That was kind of unexpected. It was standard, I would say. The offense said that their focus heading into fall camp is ball security, and for the defense, it's creating turnovers. So I'm sure fans will be excited to hear that.
Yeah, do you get you've covered a lot of events like this with team players and coaches. What's your read on the body language or anything that was noteworthy in that regard from players or coaches?
Oh, the players seemed pumped for this season. Mike Edwards was there, Dorian Baker, CJ Conrad, Josh Allen. That might have been it. Those guys seemed really, really excited for this year. And so, of course, seeing their excitement, I think, excited the fans. And the coaches are always very positive and upbeat around this time of year, as you would expect. You're in trouble if they go into July and they're like, yeah, we're not going to be so good. So everybody's pretty upbeat at this point. And the players seem really excited to get this year underway.
There was so much talk about the schedule last season and how it was going to break favorably for Kentucky. What's your sense of what fan expectation is for this year's team?
I think the fans want to see that next step, get past seven wins or, you know, getting to the bowl game, but then getting the win at the bowl game. The past 2 years they've gone, but they haven't been able to leave with a win just yet. So I think that fans want to see that next step. I don't think anybody's expecting 10 wins or going undefeated or anything like that, but I do think that they want to see some sort of tangible progress, and that's one way to see it. And then I think the other tangible progress would be having players drafted this year, which I think is almost a guarantee at this point with players like Josh Allen and CJ Conrad. But I think those are two things that the fans are really going to be looking for.
Yeah. From the reports you hear, this could be the most draft picks that Kentucky will have had in a long, long time. That should be helpful assuming it happens. That should be a big help in recruiting.
You would think so. Obviously, it's been a knock. I think it's been 2 years without having a player drafted. So I'm sure there's negative recruiting going on. Obviously, I'm not a recruit, so I don't know that for sure. But you would think that that would be a knock on the program. I know I live here in Louisville, and they use that as a knock because they've had players drafted. But I think this year, realistically, yeah, they're going to have several players drafted. I know Josh Allen was projected as a first rounder at some point last year. CJ Conrad was on Mel Kiper's top tight end prospect list. And then Benny Snell could be drafted. Dorian Baker, depending on the season that they have, they definitely have NFL bodies. So it'll be interesting to see who goes, who stays, and where players are picked up. But they're certainly going to make an impact for Kentucky this season, I would think.
You went to SEC Media Days, right?
I did.
Not much optimism for Kentucky there. I think they were picked, fifth in the SEC East. What's the, from what anything you heard there or just from looking at what they have to put on the field this year, what is the potential in your mind for Kentucky to overachieve, and what would that look like?
Yeah, I picked Kentucky to finish third in the East, and that was conservative because I put South Carolina ahead of them, and as we know, they have a four-year win streak against South Carolina. I think Kentucky can definitely overachieve, especially if they pull an upset win against someone like Florida, against Texas A&M, which would be tough because they're going to be at Kyle Field. But I think if they could pull an upset win, they could really turn some heads, especially if it's in the conference or against Louisville. I think that could be big for the team as well. Yeah, people are kind of down on the Cats this year, and I think part of it you can attribute to all the coaching changes around the conference, and people are excited about the respective schools that they cover and the potential that these coaches bring in, especially a guy like Jimbo Fisher at A&M or some of the other changes that have happened around the conference. And, of course, Georgia being the juggernaut that they were last year, they were going to get picked first in the East. I don't think there was any question about that. But I think I don't want to say it would be easy for Kentucky to overachieve, but with the talent that they have, I definitely think it's possible.
Who is the best prospect in the league to overachieve, and then who is most likely to underperform versus what they're expected to do at this point?
Ooh, let's see. Overachieve? I might have to give it to Kentucky. I would say Kentucky, yeah, probably has the most potential to overachieve based on what they're projected to do, because I think Vegas only has them winning like five games. As far as underachieving, I'm going to say Jimbo at Texas A&M. I think it's going to be more than a year to get the program the way he wants it.
You know, that's interesting. And if you know, that's the kind of thing you always tell people when you make preseason predictions. Invariably, you know, there's a team or two that's better than you thought, but there's also teams that go the other direction. And, you know, a game that a lot of people feel is one of those quote-unquote unwinnable ones for Kentucky. If it is, if you're right about A&M, then, you know, maybe you got a shot at a place like that. They're going to have to, obviously, to overachieve. They're going to have to win some two or three games, at least, that people don't expect them to.
Mm-hmm. Especially road wins. Those are going to be important. That's something that they've kind of struggled with a bit. They can get and upset at home, but it's hard to get them on the road in the SEC.
Lindsay, thank you much for the time.
Thank you so much.
Lindsay Goff, you can read a recap of the Women's Clinic in-depth piece at catsillustrated.com. And we'll head to a break, come back, and wrap up this edition of the Leach Report in just a moment. Going to wrap it up for this edition of the Leach Report. Coming up tomorrow, Paul Biancardi from ESPN. We'll talk about some of these prospects John Calipari's pursuing, and Larry Vaught, of course, as well on Tuesday. So we'll see you then here on the Leach Report Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to the Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow the Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to leachreport@